Welcome to An Examined Education, a podcast recorded at the Cambridge School, a Christian classical school in San Diego, California, where we examine an education worth pursuing.
On today's episode, you'll hear a conversation that Jeff and I had with Jean Kim, the founder and head of school at the Cambridge School. She speaks beautifully about Christian classical education and what motivated her to pursue the hard work of starting a school all the way back in 2006. She has some great thoughts on what education is meant to be, from its anthropological foundations to its dignified telos. It's a great conversation that leaves Jeff and I speechless more than once throughout. We're sure you'll love it. With that, I give you our host, Jeff Yoder.
Today on An Examined Education, we will be talking with the founder and the head of school here at the Cambridge School, Jean Kim. This is a follow-up episode from when we played her address to new parents. Every summer, we have three different events of the new parent orientation. And it's something new that we added last year to help new parents acclimate to the Cambridge community, to our culture, and give them some much-needed information that they need, principles of partnership, things like that. It also brings new parents into the Cambridge story for them to write their chapter. And it's a good story. Anyway, so welcome, Jean Kim, to An Examined Education.
Hello, I'm so glad to be with you all.
So I'm just going to kind of dive a little bit deeper into some of the questions that I had and listening to the address to the new parents. And one of those questions, I guess, is in starting the school, starting the Cambridge School, what was the big why? And you talked about having kind of an elite education and that you felt like you were missing something. What were some of those things?
Mm-hmm. So that's a great question. As I think back to my own education, I'd had this wonderful opportunity to go to a wonderful independent school up in Los Angeles and then go to Yale. And I felt like both of those educational environments gave me something to love, helped me love education. But I did feel like there was an overarching purpose that was missing. And as I went into teaching and taught at the high school level for a number of years, the same question plagued me. It seems like there was no purpose to education beyond college and career, beyond just the utilitarian. And so I would always ask kids, why are you studying so hard? Why does this matter at all? And they would always answer, oh, because I need to go to a good college. And then I would ask them, well, why do you need to go to a good college? And they would say, well, I need to get a good job. And why do you need a good job? Because I need to make a good living. And then I would ask them, well, so what's the point of making a good living? And they had no answer for me. And I think that was the part that concerned me the most, is I thought there must be more to education than merely going to college and getting a good job and dying with the most toys at the end of the day. And so as I thought about that, I remembered that my mom had told me quite a lot as I was growing up that the whole point of being an educated person was so that you would be truly human. And that it was more than just about jobs and college, but that it was to help you make a good life. And that's never left me, that my mom would tell me stories like that. And so as I thought about my own children and how to educate them next and what I wanted for them, I knew that I didn't want them just to go to a good college and get a good job. Those are great byproducts of a good education, but I really felt like they shouldn't be the only goals of an education. And so I was looking for a place that might be able to provide them more than that, help them to become wise and virtuous people, people who knew how to not just make a good living, but also make a good life. And that's what we ended up doing here at Cambridge.
You said that you found classical Christian education and it was like coming home for the first time. What were some of the things that in your initial contact with classical Christian education that really struck a chord with you?
Yeah, as I thought about that, when I read about the trivium, and that was my first contact with classical education, was learning about the trivium, which is common for a lot of people who are just getting to know it. And I thought, I had had a lot of grammar, and I had had, by virtue of my Latin education, quite a lot of Latin grammar and English grammar. But when I heard about logic and I thought, oh, if I just had this, it would have made so many things easier in my own education and in my own thoughts and all of that. And as I learned more about rhetoric, I got so excited and I thought, where was this in my education? I really wish it had been part of my education so I could have had a framework in which to understand the various things I was encountering, either in culture at large or in my own educational work. And part of it is that I felt like my education, even at prestigious institutions, was fragmented at best. There was nothing that really held it together. Everything was really atomized and fragmented. And I just wanted to know, was there more? Was there more of a story? Was there some way that all of these things were unified?
My co-host side note here is that we will definitely be exploring the trivium and quadrivium in a later episode. We can bring some people on to talk more about that. But Jean gave you a hint there, this kind of grammar, logic, rhetoric that is not only a structural framework for understanding what we do here at the school, but it takes into play a whole host of things, the developmental stages of the students, and it also informs even some of the curriculum proper, so to speak. So we'll definitely explore more of that in the future.
And I realized in a lot of ways that what I was missing in my schooling and my education was I always wondered, like, some people just seem so smart, right? And you wonder, how are they like that? And I felt like when I read about classical Christian education for the first time, I understood that here is an education that made explicit the things that come real implicitly to really smart, intelligent people, and that it could be accessible to more people than just those who are naturally smart. And so that was really exciting to me, that there's a way that certain people learn to think, and there's a way that they learn to express themselves that I hadn't been taught, and that I was always fumbling for and trying to piece together in just one crumb at a time, trying to piece this thing together. And here was this very organized way of teaching students how to think and how to communicate well, and I just wanted that.
For whom, then, is this education? You mentioned that it's not just for the kind of naturally gifted, but that it lays out these tools that are accessible to many students, every student. What do you think? What's a Cambridge education? Who do you have in mind as you start this school, not just your own students, but surely other students that populate the building? Who's it for?
Well, I think as I thought about it, I thought it really is for everybody. It's not just for those who are capable already. I think the beauty of a classical education that it takes kids who are naturally capable and takes them very, very far. But even for those who are not as naturally gifted, it makes explicit all these implicit tools, these tools that come implicitly to people who are naturally gifted, and it gives them access to those same tools. And so those students who maybe are, you know, you might think, oh, I'm just an average student, they can go so much further with this kind of education than they would without it. And for those who are really gifted naturally, they are able to shoot for the moon and go there. It's amazing to see.
That's great. I want to get back to one thing, Jean, that you were talking about, and that was your initial contact with classical Christian education when you talked about the logic and the rhetoric school. And I know that when you built the school, you just started with kinder or junior kinder and first grade, and they're not doing logic then. So how did those things play into your understanding of the grammar, logic, and rhetoric school play into the start when you talk about the starting with the end in mind?
So I had been a high school teacher before I ever started the school, and I loved teaching high school students. I was a humanities and history teacher. The frustrating thing to me about teaching at the high school level is that you don't have any control over the kinds of students and the educational experiences that they've had before they get to high school. And so though I was really excited to be able to teach them all sorts of things in my classes, I had to work with whatever they were coming with into ninth grade. And I found myself not being able to press as far as I would like to go or press as deeply as I wanted to because of their lack of preparation K through eight. And so when starting the school, I knew that if we were ever going to have a really robust high school, and if we were ever going to execute on a classical Christian education in the way that I wanted to, that the only way to make that happen would be to start at the beginning and to build very, very slowly and give ourselves maximum runway to develop the kinds of students and skills and affections and content needed in order for them to really flourish and have the robust classical Christian educational experience that I want for them at the high school level.
Yeah, I remember when I went to seminary for the first time, all of our classes, our professors would give us these handouts on like how to write an essay for them. And I remember being struck that apparently I didn't know how to write an essay, despite the fact that I had gone through 12 years of schooling and then 4 years of college. And now here I am at a grad school and I can't write an essay. But B, kind of motivated to be a part of a project like this one, where perhaps they might inherit students at a graduate level who knew how to write, you know, winsomely, logically, structurally. So we see that even in kind of like higher education. So many educational models, or I should say, so many institutions are kind of bemoaning the lack of ability of incoming students. So to have that kind of vision from junior kindergarten is something that I'm sure many professors will be thankful for in the future.
And I feel like there are two trends that are happening in education. In one way, a lot of things that we used to teach in junior high have been pushed up to high school, and things that we used to teach in high school have been pushed later into college, and things that we used to teach in college are now being pushed to grad school. To your point, a lot of people don't learn how to think or write well until they get to grad school. And I don't know why we need to wait till grad school for students to learn how to think and to write well and to speak well. And so that's one trend of things being pushed back later and later that used to be taught earlier. And on the other hand, there's this focus on the complete opposite, is this over-specialization at earlier and earlier grades and ages. And so now if you like math and you're a three-year-old, we're going to make you do math and more math and more math, you know, from the time you're three all the way till you're done with high school, without giving you a chance to really explore all these other areas of study and things that you might be interested in that would make you a humane generalist instead of a technical specialist too soon. And the whole point of this classical education is, a classical Christian education, is that we want you to be a humane generalist first, before you ever become a technical specialist. We want you to be a certain type of person before you ever take on a certain type of job. And we really want you to learn how to think and speak and write at an early age so that you can engage with the world beyond our school walls in college, in the graduate school, in the workplace, and in the culture at large, intelligently and thoughtfully, whether you end up going to get a PhD or not.
Yeah, so you've spoken about the kind of like larger impact that you would hope this kind of education would have on the larger community. And I'm wondering if we could tie that into the for whom. Mm-hmm. In many ways, we're inviting, hopefully, as wide a swath of students as we can into schools like ours. What do you see as this, your vision kind of starting when you did? What do you see as the overall impact as students graduate from this institution and go out? We've had two graduating classes now who have happily entered into their lives outside of Cambridge, and hopefully we'll have a conversation with them in the future. But what are your hopes?
So I think in starting the school, what I love about this model is I thought, this is it, because this is an elite education without the elitism that usually is attached to it. And what I mean by that is, elitism is usually just excellence with arrogance. And that's what people see it as, elitist. And what we're trying to do here at Cambridge is produce excellence, but with humility. And I think that has far-reaching impact, not just on the student, but for every person that student's life touches. And that's different spheres of influence as they go on in their lives, whether it's their classroom, their future college communities, for the people that become their coworkers, for their future families and their friends. There is huge and widespread impact that is also intergenerational out of this. So the beauty of this is that they learn to become wise and virtuous people people who know how to love things that are truly worth loving, and then they step into the world being both excellent at what they do, but humble about it. And they use those gifts humbly in service of both God and neighbor. And I think that's going to have huge impact, not just so the school, even though the school may be small, we're going to have end up having a huge impact on the world around us through each student who leaves us having been thus formed. And so I think about George Whitfield's his comment that, you know, that every student that you train and form and teach, that their name is Legion, that you're not just teaching one student, but through them, you're touching many, many lives over the course of a lifetime. And so this is having an impact, not just on their immediate families as they do carpool and drive to school back and forth each and every day, not just on their families and their siblings and their extended family when they have dinners at home or over holidays, but in every sphere of influence that they go on to touch. And so I think the impact is just enormous to have students who have been shaped like this to go on and touch so many lives.
I think that's great. I think of your, even it seems like a catalyst for your starting the school was even your mom's philosophy of education being about humanity. And so I just wonder, as our students interact with that at a very practical, in some sense, a beautifully mundane level, day in and day out, the kind of effect that they might have leaving a school that has put humanity at the center. I think that's lovely.
And it seems that this telos or this end is so different from other educational choices that people have. But how do you make all of that good stuff, that extra stuff, besides just mere information, but that formation, how do you make that happen in the classroom from junior K through 12th grade? That's a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Just magic.
How does it happen? I'm not in the classroom, so I don't get to see it. But
This is a huge thing because it's what we call the 15,000 hour decision, because 15,000 hours is about how much time a child will spend in school from kindergarten through 12th grade. And those 15,000 hours have formative impact, whether for good or for ill. You're being formed by something during your time in school. And so we hope that the 15,000 hours that they spend at Cambridge will not just be about a particular curriculum that has a particular content and bent towards it. That's part of it, but that's certainly not all of it. I think far more important than that is the way it's taught, the pedagogy. It's the community within which it's taught and caught, and it's the culture. So we have a very distinct, not just a distinct end of being more than college and career preparation, but about the cultivation of wisdom and virtue and about the formation of good habits of mind and good habits of soul. That's our distinct end, but I think the means with which we attain those ends is equally distinct, that it is a very intentional and thoughtful curriculum, pedagogy, culture, and community that helps shape them over those 15,000 hours to become, to fulfill our portrait of the graduate, to become all that we hoped these students would be when they leave us. And of course, no one our portrait of the graduate says that they will be winsome Christians and humble servants and well-equipped stewards and virtuous scholars, and no one is going to be perfectly all those things, especially at 18. So we understand that they're not going to be perfectly that. However, the idea that they're on a great trajectory, that they're on their road to becoming those things, is really exciting to us, and that's why for us, the end has never been college. It's not about where they go at 18 and who they are at 18. It's like, who are they going to be when they're 30 and 40 and 50? What kind of impact are they going to have on their communities and their families and workplaces? That's what excites us. And so the end, the telos, is much, much bigger than just mere college and career readiness. And the means are very distinct. And I think the results are, they speak for themselves as being very different as well.
So Jean, you've talked about human and humane education. How does the view of humanity or the anthropology of humans play into how we teach our students?
That's a great question. I don't think people in education always think about this very often, or parents who are coming to schools. Anthropology is probably not the first place they go in thinking about an education, but your anthropology really does matter, because I think every educational system or philosophy assumes an anthropology and assume somebody's presuppositions. That's why they're called presuppositions, I suppose. But in this case, I think having a Christian anthropology that assumes that people are made in Imago Dei, in the image of God, is huge as a starting point, that we are not just the result of random atoms coming together and random forces creating life, but that there is a purpose, there's a stamp of the image of God in each one of us that gives us intrinsic and inherent value. So if that's the case, that we have the image of God and we're image bearers, and if the point of being an image bearer, hopefully somehow to know your creator, to know God and to enjoy him forever, then the whole point of education would be totally different than if you didn't believe those things. And so we believe that there's a purpose for life. We believe that, you know, God exists and has made us for a purpose. And that shapes the way you teach. It shapes to what end you teach. And so if this is not just, well, you're meant to be merely an economic man or economic being, and therefore we're going to teach you towards just merely utilitarian and economic ends, where you're just going to be educated so that you can be a good cog in a wheel and you can be a good worker bee somewhere, and that's the only point of it. Our whole education, the anthropology says, no, you're a human being and we want you to flourish, and that the glory of God is man fully alive. We really believe that here, and that when people are alive intellectually and relationally and spiritually and physically, that brings glory to God. And so we want those kids to grow in all those ways into their full humanity, because that is not only a delight and a blessing for them, but a delight and a blessing to the community around them. And hopefully that brings glory to God. And so with that understanding, you just tend to teach them differently. If you really do believe that you're just going to be a worker bee, you will teach them to that end. And so if you believe that their end is to be a flourishing human being, you will teach them radically different things, and you will teach them in a different manner that helps support who that you want them to be.
Yeah, and I would say that anthropology is the foundation, not just for our kind of classroom interactions, but it is kind of spread throughout every aspect of school life. It's mm-hmm. how we build communities intentionally. And we can talk more about this in the future with our house system and what we're doing kind of in between classes. Mm-hmm. It affects how we talk to our students in the hallways before and after school. It informs our approach to athletics, and it affects the admissions process and how we talk to parents throughout the year. It's how we approach their students. It's how we give them assessments. Mm-hmm. It changes the way that we approach every facet of life at the Cambridge School. That's wonderful.
We recently had our annual alumni summer party, summer bash. And we gave each of the alumni a sheet to write down certain things. Some of them were like, what's your stress snack? So that we could send that to them. But one of the questions was, what's your favorite memory? And I would say 80% of them said the relationships that they had with their teachers. And that makes such a huge difference. And I think it speaks to the anthropology of who we think these kids are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. We should probably wrap up soon, Jean. We've taken so much of your time. But I'm curious, what are your hopes for the future? What do you want to see? You had that great vision years ago, and we're now two graduating classes in. What do you hope 30 graduating classes from now? What keeps you going here?
Definitely. We began with the end in mind and wanted to reverse engineer this whole process. And we built the school not K through 12, but 12K, starting with the end in the mind and building things backwards. When I think about the future and I think about what Cambridge will be 30 years from now, I hope that all the things that are most special about the school in terms of our very distinct culture and pedagogy, community, and culture, those things and their special relationships that the students have with their teachers and the administration and the healthy culture of the entire organization, that those things will remain mission true, that we won't deviate from any of those very distinct things that make us wonderful. I do hope that in 30 years from now, the things that are more challenging for us, logistical things and having facilities that accommodate, our vision and support it in better ways than our current facilities do.
We teach out of closets presently.
Yes. Right now we have students in windowless closets with no air conditioning, and that's not a very good way to do school. But it's probably built a lot of grit in them, and they'll become fond memories. I hope those kinds of things have been resolved, but without losing the heart of what we're doing and without losing the passion around this formation, this formative education. That's what I would hope remains in all of this.
And do you have any resources that you'd recommend if people were interested in classical schools? You know, you picked up a book and kind of returned home again, as you say. For parents or listeners who are interested in the movement, anything come to mind that you'd recommend?
There's a lot to read. It's a very old tradition. And so if you could, you can start in lots of different places, but it might, just to give you handholds on it, I began reading, my whole foray into classical Christian education began with Douglas Wilson's book, Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning. He talks about the trivium, but there's a lot more to classical Christian education than just that. And so the next book that was written in this movement was called Wisdom and Eloquence. And it said, there's more than just the trivium that we need to recover. There's the trivium and the quadrivium, all seven liberal arts. And so that was great for expanding our view of what could be in classical Christian education. And then there have been other books that have been published after that, but that said, but wait, there's more. And that might be a book, something like The Liberal Arts Tradition by Kevin Clark and Ravi Jain, that says, no, even more than the liberal arts, there are things that come before and after it that round out and make this a really full picture. And so those are good starting points. I mean, those are just books that are accessible and give you an idea of, you know, what once was and why we have, we've lost it and how we're coming back to recover it.
Great. The rhetorician in me also wants to plug something like Quintilian.
Yes.
Or Erasmus,
yes.
That there are,
right.
We can even go back to some of these primary sources when they are right. doing the educational model that we're trying to right. reinvigorate. So there's a lot out there. I know that's a difficult question to
yes.
even begin to answer.
It is. It is a hard one. And depending on just, I think, your level of familiarity, like I think these are like 101 books, and then
definitely.
You can actually go ad fontes and go back to the sources to see and understand the primary sources that help give us this tradition.
Well, Jean, thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us and to really dive deep into some of the reasons why you started the Cambridge School and how it's really affecting the students and making a huge impact on them. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, we appreciate your time. If you're interested in anything that Jean talked about today, you can check out our show notes where we'll link to the books that she mentioned. Until next time, I'm DJ.
And I'm Jeff.
See you later. Thanks for listening to An Examined Education. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, be sure to check out our website, schedule a tour, reach out to the Advancement Office. We'd love to see you. And we'd love to hear what you have to say about the podcast, so be sure to check us out on your favorite social media platform. Again, that's at An Examined Education. Leave us a comment, rate and review, and we'll see you next time.